Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Everybody, we're here to wrap up the TOS and TNG movies. It's been quite an experience. We spent the past 10 weeks going through all of the TOS films, all the TNG movies, right before we start moving on to Deep Space Nine, the series after this. And Clay is here joining us. We're going to talk about our sort of general wrap-up thoughts about the movies as a whole. Just give maybe 10, 15 minutes about it. Nothing real in-depth. If you want in-depth analysis about the movies, go back and check out the individual podcast. But Clay, how are you?
I'm good. I thought we were going to in-depth on all of them again in one combined show.
See how poorly...
Like the collected Blu-ray set of the podcasts in a single podcast.
Going back on it, probably it would show you how bad your memory is about the things. Mine would certainly be bad. I probably couldn't remember.
My memory is bad episode to episode of pretty much any show we do. So
yep.
I don't think it doesn't help for me to go back and see what I said.
Getting into the movies. Yeah, do we have any sort of general... takes about it? I guess I'll start by just saying that the TOS has improved in stature a little bit for me. TNG mm-hmm. has gone down in stature, the movie franchises anyway. Mm-hmm. I think that's the general consensus about it. The TOS movies feel more complete and like of a package than the TNG, but the TOS movies feel that way as opposed to the TNG movies, which feel more scattershot to me and less focused and less satisfying as a whole. And I think that the TOS movies are just sort of generally better. Is there anything you sort of wanted to just sort of big, broad takeaways from this?
Well, I came to the same conclusion you did. And I think what I came away with was more of a question, which was, why is that the case? Why are the TOS movies more successful than the TNG movies? And I was wondering if it had to do with the fact that there was just, that before the movie started, there was so much more TNG, that there was so much more time for the cast to turn into like a true ensemble with characters that were all really pretty fleshed out. So when you get to the movies, it's harder to make everybody work. Whereas TOS, it's always, you know, Scotty's there too, Chekhov is there too, but it's always been Kirk and Spock, sometimes Kirk, Spock, and McCoy.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that had something to do with it. I also thought that, it seemed like the TNG movies were... by and large steered by people who worked on the show. And I wonder if that was actually a negative, because you don't get the good Star Trek movies until they just let somebody else do it.
Right. Yeah. You know? Yep. Yep. I mean, to tie into that, I think it might actually be the amount of time that TNG went, it was also time to develop an ensemble. It's also a chance to sort of run out of ideas for movies in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
the TOS movies had a kind of freshness to them because they weren't like anything that had happened previously, where...
And so much time had passed too, you know?
Right, and time had passed, and it wasn't just like picking up right after. So you've got the angle there of the aging actually makes sense in the TOS movies. They have storylines that they haven't repeated at this point. And TNG is the exact opposite of that stuff. And I think that, you know, the strength of the TOS is that the limiting of the main cast members allows you to have a better film version, where the TNG crew, where everyone is not really equal, but they're at least more on the same level of each other in terms of what screen time they deserve and everything like that. The TNG cast is harder to bring to the big screen because you have to, as we've talked about before in all the movies, the only way to deal with these movies is to split the cast up, because it gives each of them a chance to do things. And the most successful of the movies do that, and the least successful tend to not do it.
Do you think that the TNG movies... So, I mean, I guess they kind of had to do Generations when they did it to capitalize on the popularity of the show, and also because the other actors were dropping like flies from the old show.
Yeah.
but do you think... they would have benefited if they had taken more time off? Like if they had ended the show, I guess done Generations, but let's for the sake of argument say they didn't do Generations. They end the show and then they don't do the first movie until like 2000. Or do you think by that point Star Trek was so dead that it wouldn't have helped?
Yeah, I think Nemesis came out in 2002, right? And Nemesis coming out in 2002 is actually 4 years after Insurrection came out. So that's a big delay. And at that point, Star Trek was already dead. And I don't think that there would have been the interest in it. So I think that they had to strike while the hammer was hot
Makes sense.
And it was just too soon after the series had ended. Like, the TOS movies are just better. You just have this sense of like scope to them that doesn't really happen in the TNG movies. Like, time has passed. These are different people. They look different. And TNG is just more of the same. In a lot of situations, it doesn't make sense. They just have to bring back people like Worf and things. They have to keep coming back to the ship. It doesn't have the solidarity that the TOS movies have. And I also think that the TOS movies feel similar to each other. Like, they feel like they're kind of in the same universe in a way that the next gen movies don't feel that way. They look different from each other. They have different sort of storylines. They have themes that don't cross across all the movies in a lot of ways. And I think that does a disservice to it as well.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's strange because the TOS movies do all feel like part of the same thing, but they're the least similar as far as like movie to movie action.
Yeah, right.
Whereas the TNG movies are pretty much a straight line. You know, the ship stays the same for the most part.
Yep.
The uniforms stay the same for the most part. The crew stays the same for the most part.
It's like you said, in Nemesis, it feels like they're just kind of on a mission, like over again in the Next Generation movies.
For better and worse, I guess, because, you know, as I said, when we were covering the movies, I think one of the things that makes the TNG movies work for me, even though they're not necessarily great movies sometimes, is that it is like watching an episode of the show, like a bigger budget episode of the show. And I do find that to be kind of like comforting.
Right.
Where the TOS movies are, you know, it's always kind of where you've got the TNG movies have, everybody is still kind of like doing the same thing. You know, they're all playing the same characters in the same positions of rank and all that kind of stuff. The TOS movies always feel like they are out of their comfort zone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe that's part of why they feel kind of stale, is because they are just sort of more of the same from the show.
Yeah, right. And I think it's the, we had in one of the previous, it was probably Insurrection. It's the movies, the Star Trek movies that try to do something different tend to be the better ones. Like, they step out of their genre conventions and they do sort of, you know, they do the Vengeance film, they do the comedy film, they do the First Contact as the good example of the Next Gen stuff. It's like, it's basically a horror movie. With Star Trek on top of it. And I think that's the way to go with it. Like, the adventures of the Starship Enterprise are not particularly cinematically worthy unless you do something with them. They're better suited to a TV small type experience.
It's that weird thing that we've talked about across a lot of the movies, where you kind of have to, I think Insurrection was where we talked about it the most, where it's like the stakes feel like they need to be high to warrant, like they need to be like almost operatic to warrant a Star Trek movie. But at the same time, they can't be too big that they're like ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or hard to relate to. Like, I think the biggest problem with Nemesis, or at least one of them anyway, is that you don't really know what the hell the point is. Like, what's Shinzon going after? It seems to be Earth, but you're not really sure why. And it's a scale of problem that is not anchored with any sort of emotional or character element to kind of back it up.
Yeah, yeah.
And for the most part, the TOS movies seem to have that through all of them. You know, even in 5, as bad as 5 is, you've got they at least anchor some of the stupid shit that's going on on the God planet on Kirk's anger that he's dealing with. You know, that's a good scene where he gives that line about, you know, his anger is what keeps him going and all that kind of stuff. And that kind of holds it together. Whereas in the TNG movies, it kind of a holdover from the show. 'Cause I feel like they do that in the show a lot too, where it's not really, they don't really have that in a lot of them. First Contact obviously is the most effective, because you've got your larger scale thing going on, but it's also a very personal, you know, Picard story.
Yeah,
for the most part.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's a pretty accurate representation of it. They are very, very different series from each other, and I think that everything that TOS does pretty well, I think TNG doesn't do well, and I think it's just TNG works better as a series than TOS did, I think. But mm-hmm. because of that, they work worse as movies in a lot of ways.
I wonder if I'm kind of bummed out that Next Generation didn't get to have their Nicholas Meyer moment where they go outside of the group of people who are used to working on the property and find someone who cares about doing it. So actually does the research on it and learns the world. And in doing so finds a really interesting theme that no one has ever talked about before, or an interesting character aspect that no one's ever really leaned into before, a different take on it, but also cares about it enough to keep things of the same mold, you know? Yeah,
right. I mean, it's surprising to me how many of these movies deal with change in time, even the TNG movies. Like, it's a theme across TOS, but the TNG movies also deal with it quite a bit. And it's interesting how little, in a lot of ways, how little the 10 movies branch out from each other.
Yeah, I was surprised when we got to Generations, seeing, like, we had just watched basically 6 movies of God, it sucks to get old. And then you get to Generations, and the first thing with Picard is like, God, it sucks to get old. It's like, what? Why does graduating to a movie mean for a Star Trek captain that all of a sudden you're like, fuck, I'm just so old.
Yeah, I just don't want to do this anymore. It's just awful. It's interesting. I think it makes more sense for Kirk than it does for Picard to me. The Kirk character feels like he's the kind of captain who would be worn out and sort of he lives for the action of it in a way that I don't feel that Picard does as much. Picard mm-hmm. would step away to some sort of like quiet retirement, and Kirk would have a harder time doing that.
And I wish that they had played that up more, you know, because one of the things I was talking about in Nemesis was how they're trying to go for this moving on kind of thing. And I wish they had done kind of an inverse of what they do with Kirk, where instead of Kirk wanting to, Kirk kind of being forced to move on and not wanting to, for Picard, everybody else is moving on, and he's not. And I think one of the failings of the TNG movies, I kind of joked about it in Insurrection. If you've got a lot of them running around outside, it's generally not a good movie. It's like a marker. And I think another kind of marker is how much action Picard is involved in.
Sure.
Because when like Nemesis has Picard like running around, I believe there's one point where he's shooting 2 guns at the same time.
Oh yeah, poorly.
Just like running through the court. Yeah, and it's like this doesn't feel right. But you know, if you lean into the theme of like maybe where Kirk is lives for the action and is regretting getting old and not being able to do that stuff anymore. If you have Picard played as, well, maybe Picard feels like he's played it too safe for his entire career.
Sure.
Or played it too safe for his life, so that when he gets to that point where he is doing the running and gunning, it's sort of like he's, you know, feeling young again or something like that.
Yeah, he's trying to see what the other side of the coin would look like or something like that. Yeah.
Or it's forcing him to step outside of his comfort zone, at least.
Right, exactly. And I think that's what the best movies do to the characters, right? Like
definitely. Yeah,
that's the change, where the episodes themselves can kind of be comfortable in the comfort zone. You know, the TV series kind of relies on there being a comfort zone and you existing in it.
Yeah, it kind of has to, because, I mean, TV, especially episodic TV, is fairly formulaic, and so you need certain things to be reliably there for it to work.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, could you imagine? I guess technically this is the concept for Voyager, but I was going to say, could you imagine if every episode of TNG was them like was the ship being broken down and not being able to do? Because that's what every one of the TOS movies is like. Well, the ship isn't really working today,
right?
Yeah. But we still have to fight off an entire Klingon fleet,
and we'll do it, by God. Yeah, I think that's a pretty good breakdown of it. It's interesting, and it's a very. It's been eye-opening to go through all the things, but I think this is just going to be a short podcast, short video. You guys can hear the views that we had on the movies, where we get a better sort of grasp on each of them one in particular. But we'll just wrap this up with sort of counting down our order of the movies, and then we'll post this on the website. You can go to thepenskypodcast.com, go to the movies section, and then the ratings, and we'll have our lists here for me and Clay. So, Clay, we'll start at number 10. What's your least favorite? We'll go from least favorite to most to the best, I guess, would be the way to go about this.
I rank these sort of, I guess, partly on quality, but partly on watchability.
Yes, that's what mine is too. It's probably 60% quality, 40% watchability to me.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think it comes as a surprise to myself anyway. I was surprised at a couple of my slottings, but for this one, it's not a surprise. I put 5 at the bottom.
Okay, 5 at the bottom for you. See, five is higher on mine. Number 10 for me is Search for Spock. I still think it's the most boring out of all of them. It has like a zero watchability for me. And just in terms of the movie, it doesn't really excite me. So you've got 5 and I've got Search for Spock. How about the one after that? What's slightly better than 5 for you?
I went Insurrection on that one.
My Insurrection is my 9 as well.
Which I didn't think I was going to do because I liked it. I thought it was decent when I watched it.
But yeah, you were just positive on the podcast about it.
I don't hate it. It's just, you know, I don't as far as something that I would reach into the collection to throw on while I was doing something else. Insurrection is pretty low on the list.
All right, yeah, Insurrection is mine, number 9, and then my 8 is Final Frontier. That's 5 for me.
That's where I put Spock for that one.
You put Spock, so we just switched those two around. And then after that, I have Generations.
Nemesis for you.
Then I have Nemesis after that, slightly better than Generations. All the TNG movies are kind of clumping down at the bottom here.
Yeah.
What's your number 6?
My number 6 is number 6.
Okay, so Undiscovered Country right there for you?
Yep.
So after Nemesis, I have The Motion Picture is my number 5.
I actually have Generations at number 5.
Generations, okay. So you like Generations a little bit there.
Yeah, I think, you know, as I've said, I'm a sucker for torch passing movies and different versions of stuff, and I would be more apt to probably throw that one on just to kind of hang out with it than I would a lot of the other ones.
Yeah.
Even 6, as much as I liked 6, which, you know, wasn't as much as I remembered liking 6, but 6 is a solid movie. But even there, it's like, I don't know. There's not a lot of stuff that I
would go back to.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. It's good, but it doesn't pop out in my mind super. It doesn't pop out in my mind a lot.
So my 4th is Undiscovered Country. That's the 4th best movie to me. What's your number 4?
Motion Picture.
Okay. So yeah, we're getting a little bit of variance here. Number 3 is First Contact for me.
3 is Voyage Home.
And then 2 for you would be First Contact.
Correct.
Yeah, 2 for me is Khan. And number 1 for me is Voyage Home. And number 1 for you would be
Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, so that's it. That's the order right there. I basically see them as you could clump them into 3 tiers, which you did in a previous podcast. My Voyage Home to Undiscovered. So Voyage, Khan, First Contact, and Undiscovered are like the top tier of the movies for me. The second tier would be Motion Picture, Nemesis, Generations, and Final Frontier. And then the bottom two movies are Insurrection and Search for Spock, basically.
Yeah. Do you, I don't know, maybe this falls under the umbrella of what we were talking about earlier, but which cast do you think was served the best?
It's definitely TOS.
Yeah.
They just had things going on that, like, Beverly Crusher basically might as well, they'll not exist in the TNG movies.
Yeah.
It's that kind of, like, TOS is just better served in general. It ends and it feels like it's a complete story. Like, it feels like that crew is done at that point. Mm-hmm. TNG didn't have that.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think in First Contact, Robert Picardo's holographic doctor might have more lines than Beverly Crusher does.
Yeah, and that's what people were looking for. Yeah, so you guys, you can go to the Penske podcast. You can check out those ratings. They'll be up there for that. It's been interesting. And yeah, the ranking of the movies, we do the 1 to 5 thing for all of the series episodes, but I feel like ranking the movies against each other is a better way to compare them because of it's tough to sort of numerically give them a grade. It's better just to rate them against each other and see where they go.
Yeah. How would you feel, and are you surprised that they haven't done this yet, about if I think at this point in popular culture where stuff just seems to be coming back. I mean, Arrested Development came back. Will and Grace is coming back. Everything's coming back. I am surprised that no one, maybe someone has pitched this, that no one has pitched a TNG universe like reunion movie.
Yeah,
that would feature TNG, Voyager, and Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, I think they're scared of it, right? And Tarek on Twitter brought the fact, like, would we want to see a TNG movie? You brought up, like, you'd be comfortable with the TNG movie being in the Abrams universe, as like the Abrams crew takes on the Borg and the
Fuck
TNG crew.
Yes,
that's
Fuck
your thing.
Yes.
I'm generally
the Abrams cast versus the Borg in and of itself is what I want to see. But if you added on top of that, like, a time thing where the current, quote unquote, current day TNG crew ended up back there, so it's like old Riker trying to fight that, I would 100% I'd be on board for that.
That's probably the best case scenario. I wouldn't want to see a TNG movie. It would be tough to pull off, I think, and especially if you combined all the crew, the DS9, Voyager, and everything like that. It would be,
well, I guess
they feel of a different era.
Yeah, I guess I was just thinking, like, if is now the time to do
that kind of a thing?
What they did with Wrath of Khan, you know, like, is now the time to do a TNG movie where everyone is actually older, or is there no point because that's basically what they did for the finale of the show and it worked fine as it was?
You know, there's a Brian Fuller got let go of the Discovery. He was the showrunner, and the initial reports was that he left because he didn't want to do it. Well, new reports have come out showing that he was sort of forced out of it. And that his original idea was to have the series be an anthology series. So each season, it would be like American Horror Show. Each season is a different story.
Is that not what they're doing?
That's not what they're doing anymore. But that was his original idea. And what he was going to do was have the first season be before TOS, the second one take place during TOS, and then each season would match one of the other series' time era.
Yeah.
And then it would end with a series that would be in the future.
I would 100% be on board with that. I know exactly why the suits weren't on board with that, because that shit's expensive.
Yes, it's expensive. You're changing over casts and everything. And
yeah,
people can't
every season of the show, they have to redo sets for a different era of the show.
Yep.
I mean, that would be so expensive. I mean, American Horror Story, it usually takes place in one place.
Right. It's like that HBO Room 104. Have you seen that?
No, I saw the preview for it. I haven't seen any episodes for it yet.
Yeah, it's interesting. It all takes place in the same hotel room, but it's a different story. But
exactly.
That would have been the Star Trek. I would have been very interested in it. It's just not feasible. But that's the way that I would want to revisit this era of Star Trek, of the TNG era.
I think they could do it if they did short seasons. If they did like a 5 or 6 episode season where it's, you know, I guess it's still the cost is building the shit, I guess. But
yep.
But, you know, if it was something that was a little bit less... Well, I honestly don't know, because I was going to say short seasons might be more feasible to do it, but at the same time, if you're spending all that money on sets, you want to use them for a long time.
Yep.
So, you know, who knows? But it's unfortunate. That would have been cool.
Guys, thank you very much for listening. Thank you for supporting the podcast. We've got to run. We're going to be back with the introduction to Deep Space Nine, and then we'll be kicking off the Deep Space Nine era with all that stuff. So... Clay, thank you very much for coming on. Thank you for watching all the movies. I appreciate it. That was 20 hours of your life taken up there.
Oh, that's all right. I appreciate it being on. It's been a while since I've watched them. I was glad to watch them again. And honestly, that's 20 hours I probably just would have spent staring at a wall anyway, so I might as well do something.
What's the cutoff on your list as to you would stop saying that someone should watch the movie?
In terms, what do you mean? I'm not
in terms like the first five for me are Voyage Home, Khan, First Contact, Undiscovered, and the Motion Picture.
Those
would be the movies that say you guys, if you were interested in the Star Trek movies, those are the ones you should watch. And I would not watch anything after that on my list.
I would do first five. I would do Khan, First Contact, Four, Motion Picture, and Generations. I think is probably all you need.
Okay, yeah, it's the same, just slightly different in the order and everything like that. Yeah.
Unless you really like Christopher Plummer, and then you can watch six, I guess. If you really like David Warner, you can watch 6 and 5.
Yep. And then Chain of Command in TNG.
Yeah, there you go.
Guys, thank you very much for listening. Thank you for supporting the show. You can go to YouTube if you watch us there. Like in the comments. Appreciate it. Rate us on iTunes, all the podcatchers, Facebook.com/LePenskyPodcast and Patreon.com/LePenskyFile. Much appreciated. Clay, thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
And guys, we'll see you next time.